passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Are you looking to upgrade your game on and off the field? Triple Crown Jewelry makes the cleanest jewelry in the game so you can show your style. Their jewelry is made by athletes for athletes with durability and style in mind. They make the best-selling number pendants and chains that you're already seeing on the field. Whether your style is gold, matte black, or silver, Triple Crown Jewelry has what you need. Personally, I'm more about the silver, but Triple Crown is ready for whatever your style. The chains look great. They're durable with a shine that stands out, and when you put it on, it has a nice heft to it. You can feel the quality. Your number is yours. It's part of your identity, and Triple Crown knows that. They have numbers from 00 to 99 available, so you can show your number, your identity, on and off the field. Their jewelry will never turn your neck green or fade. They're tarnish resistant and made to last. These aren't just accessories. They're a statement of your dedication and love for the game. And that shine is unmatched. And in addition to choosing between the three different finishes, you can also choose from a variety of chains, including rope, Franco, and Cuban chains. So try it yourself. If you're ready to elevate your drip on and off the field, get some new drip at triplecrownjewelry.com and get a special discount just for our listeners. Get 25% off your first order site-wide with promo code BA2022. That's BA2022 at triplecrownjewelry.com. And by doing so, you're supporting our podcast. Orders are shipped the same or next business day from New Jersey, and orders over $50 get free shipping. Don't miss out on the opportunity to make a statement both on and off the field. Go to triplecrownjewelry.com and lead the league in drip.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another Baseball America Prospects podcast. I'm Kyle Glazer alongside Josh Norris.
Howdy.
We're here to talk about the Orioles today. And Josh, something interesting, at least one of the biggest things I took away from this past season, was talking to a scout who had Orioles coverage. And what he said to me was, you know, the Orioles system is nowhere near as bad as people think it is. Now, obviously not a top 10 system, but I think coming into the year, a lot of folks viewed it as a bottom three, bottom four system. And throughout the year, it became clear, talking to evaluators at the pro level, that it was actually better than that, and that people had been underestimating some of the prospects in this system.
Well, right. I mean, I'm sure not too many people had Austin Hayes real high on their radars coming into the year. I mean, third round pick, I believe, out of Jacksonville, coming into his first full pro year. And, you know, third round pick, enough something to watch. But I didn't think we expected him to go from Frederick to Bowie to the major leagues this year.
No question. I look at this top six put together by John Mioli of the Baltimore Sun. And you look at Austin Hayes, Ryan Mountcastle, Chance Sisko, Hunter Harvey, DL Hall, Tanner Scott. That's a top six that's definitely nothing to shake your head at. A better top six than quite a few organizations out there, including their own division. Certainly a better top six than the Red Sox have.
Mm-hmm.
I do think the Orioles system as a whole is better than public perceptions have been. And a lot of that is Austin Hayes and his addition and his ascent. But even guys who are already in the system, Mountcastle, Sisko, Tanner Scott, took steps forward in various ways.
Yeah, I mean, Mountcastle has long been what we thought he is going to be, is a hitter. A suspect on defense. Certainly not. I mean, I think internally for years they've said he's not a shortstop. I guess they're trying him at third base now. I wouldn't be surprised if his likely destination is left field or first base. But, you know, he played third base in the fall league. But what's going to get him there is his bat. And he looks like he's got the makings of a potential premium bat.
You know, the Orioles as a whole, I think we talk about their system and some of the guys in there, and clearly they're a major league team that has some holes right now, but you look at it, and again, there's different contracts and seeing how long these guys will be in Orioles uniforms, but you see Jonathan Scope, Manny Machado, Trey Mancini, you can add Austin Hayes to that after getting there last year. On the pitching side, Dylan Bundy, Kevin Gausman, Michael Givens, Zach Britton. There is a homegrown core there, both position players and pitchers, but filling in those gaps is where they've had some struggles, particularly on the pitching side, specifically to last year.
I mean, I still am amazed by this fact about Hunter Harvey. He's been in the 2013 draft. He's been in five straight handbooks. never lower than number four, and has never pitched a game above low class A. That speaks to A, the quality of past Orioles systems, and B, the quality of his stuff. Yeah. If he clicks, you know, we learned the lesson of Dylan Bundy, who spent, I don't know, half his life on the DL, it seems like, coming up in the minor leagues, but he still had the knockout stuff. And Hunter Harvey remains to be seen if he still has that, but if he has the stuff we think he still does, then he could wind up in the major league sooner rather than later if he just stays healthy.
So we talk about those pitchers, Hunter Harvey 4, DL Hall 5, Tanner Scott 6, Cody Sedlock, their first rounder a year ago, struggled. He's at 7. And look, let's just be frank. The Orioles need pitching, they need lots of it, and they need it to come quick. All these guys, Tanner Scott got into the upper minors, but all these guys... you're right. He got a stint there. I feel like, though, you know, a lot of the starting pitching, it's guys who are 2 years away, especially with Harvey and his health. What do you think the Orioles can do to supplement and get their pitching staff just better? Because it has to be. They were one of the better teams in the American League for a number of years. They've fallen off. Now they're losing Chris Tillman to free agency, and not that he had a great year. They've got to get some arms there quick, and I'm not sure I see a path for them to get them there quick.
Well, I don't know if you've heard about this offseason, but there's a lot of really good pitchers out there for the taking.
Yes.
All it would take is Peter Angelos and co. opening their wallets to go get some of these guys. Alex Cobb is out there for the taking.
Lance Lynn.
Yu Darvish is out there for the taking.
There's a good group of pitchers. And that's where I think, and that's sort of what I was trying to lead into here, is that the Orioles, I think you can look at their position player group. Obviously, Machado's a fridge, and after this year, we'll see how that goes. But just in general, and say, hey, we have guys who can help us now. You know, Ryan Mountcastle got to Double-A last year. Went to the Fall League, shows the bat will play. I like where the Orioles are position player-wise. It's on the pitching side, I think they are going to have to supplement with free agency. Even if Hunter Harvey and D.L. Hall, you know, hit their ceilings and Tanner Scott becomes that bona fide relief ace and Cody Sedlock has a bounce-back year, even that best-case scenario,
Keegan Aiken has a bounce-back
year. It's
still
not going to be enough. They need more, and that's where I think you do have to go get some free agent help.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And then, of course, we could also start in the draft this year. We have a top 200, I believe, up draft
we
prospects.
We do, and the Orioles will have a decent pick as well, so we'll see how it goes. But I want to dive into some of these prospects real quick. So Austin Hayes, we talked about it, third-round pick 2016, first member of that draft class to get to the majors, shot through high A, double A, into the majors at the end of this year. You know, we've talked about in the office a bit how Austin Hayes fell, and on the BA 500, he was about 40 spots higher than where he was taken. This wasn't a no-name guy. People knew him. People liked him. You know, I think it's one of those things where sometimes people get obsessed with profile, oh, corner bat, when in reality, skills are skills. Impact is impact. And this guy demonstrated impact his entire final year at Jacksonville.
But he fits the profile. He fits the corner outfield
profile. But I'm saying, I think we say, oh, corner outfielder, we're going to drop him 20 spots. When in reality, you should look at the skills of a player, not just throw him into a profile bucket. The profile is important, but skills are more important. And there are, we talk about profile. The two reigning MVPs last year were a right fielder and a second baseman. People overall obsess over the up-the-middle guy. And Judge has played some center field, Altuve never played
shortstop. Well, Judge hasn't played center field as a pro.
But college, he did a little bit.
Well, what I'm saying is, I mean, Judge fits the right field profile to an absolute T.
Right, and I'm saying that's not a bad thing. So you look at Austin Hayes, who has shown the ability to play center, but just because he fit a corner profile, I think we've seen it. We see it again and again.
Yeah, I mean...
Skills above all, talent above all, and Austin Hayes has shown he has the talent to succeed no matter what position
part of the reason he moved into right field, I mean, part of that's his own defensive skills, which are not bad. But Cedric Mullins are better in center field.
Right.
And in the major leagues, Adam Jones.
So the general sense is, could Austin Hayes, if you need him to play center field, could he do it without embarrassing himself?
Absolutely.
But, you know, when you look at the grand scheme of roster construction, right field is probably just a better fit.
Right. I think my favorite thing about Austin Hayes is that in Frederick and Bowie this year, his numbers were almost identical. In almost an identical sample. It's almost eerie how close they were, because I did the Carolina League and the Eastern League for the top 20s this year, and I was like, I feel like I'm typing in, I feel like I'm making a mistake here, because these are almost exactly the same.
So, given his enormous production this year, finalist for Baseball America Player of the Year, reached the majors, did everything you could ever want a prospect to do, the scouts bought in, you know, everyone. What are some of the things you think could hamstring him, having done some of the digging on him in the Carolina League, in the Eastern League, and also you have a lot of scouts with Orioles coverage you've talked to? What's something that could hold him back from being, you know, the superstar that I think a lot of people are thinking he may now have a chance to be?
I mean, it's the same as everyone else. If he gets to the major leagues and stays in the major leagues, and the pitchers up there find a hole, then they can exploit it. I mean, it's major league pitchers are that good is what it comes down to. And you know, now that we've got advanced scouting and all that and video, it's much easier these days to find a hole and spread that information quicker than it hasn't been in past years. So I think all the tools are there for him to be an above average regular. I don't know about superstar, but a very, very, very good player for years to come. I think they, big credit to their scouting director, they found one.
You know, I think one of the big things with him has been the aggressiveness of his approach, which has helped him jump on fastballs, crush them. The ability for him to adapt that aggressiveness to secondaries, as John wrote, that's just something that's going to come with time, because a big league curveball is a different animal than a double A curveball. But, you know, as we've talked about a lot, power, defense, he mashes left-handers. Even if, you know,
he's got some speed too, because
he's got some speed.
I think one of those home runs in the big leagues was inside the Parker.
You know, even if he, you know, for whatever reason, it just doesn't end up all clicking, there's still a role there for him. And, yeah. And I think the Orioles are in really good shape. I remember at the winter meetings just talking with Buck Showalter during media availability a little bit. You know, I think they do want to get him some AAA time this year. Just, you know, the September call-up. But, you know, you look at the outfield right now. Is there a clear, hey, this guy's going to start for us on day one? Maybe, maybe not. But in reality, there's no reason to push it. I think the idea is let's get him to Norfolk. Let him just adapt and mash at that level. Buy some time on the arb clock. And then maybe make a move later in the year. Would you like to see him at Norfolk?
I mean, selfishly, yes. Because I only saw Frederick a couple games while he was there, and we could use some better video of him, but that's about it. I mean, if he produces enough to win that spot, go ahead, put him there. I mean, it's the American League East you're dealing with. Like you said, the Red Sox are going to be pretty good this year. You think the Yankees are going to be pretty good this year? The Blue Jays and the Rays, maybe. But I mean, it wouldn't be out of the question for the Orioles to hit their way to a second wild card or something like that.
And as we've seen, you know, it really takes 84 or 85 wins, at least last year I did, to get that second wild card spot. We'll see. And I do think at the end of the day, Austin Hayes will play a role for them at the major league level this year. It's just a matter of, hey, is he your, you know, opening day right fielder? Now that Seth Smith is a free agent. Maybe, maybe not. We'll see how he performs in camp. But I think the expectation is he'll at least get a little bit of time down in Norfolk. Ryan Mountcastle's another guy, you know, big bat. I think everyone who has seen him hit has liked what they've seen. He's interesting to me because, you know, we talk about Austin Hayes, also this tremendous bat, but he can play right field for you. He can play some center field if you need him to. There's not really a question of hemming and hawing, oh man, where's this guy going to really play for us? You know, Mountcastle, when I saw him, I got a good look at him at the Fall League. First of all, the guy has the reactions and reflexes for third base. He has the glove. Saw him make some plays diving both his left and his right. There's no question he has the glove footwork reflexes for it. His arm is one of the worst arms I have seen in professional baseball in a long time. And it's not just the strength, it's the action. And it's just a problem where there's no strength, there's no carry. I mean, he does not make throws you have to make. There's a lot there where I really sit there and say, I don't even know if it's enough arm for left field. Are you trying to hit a cutoff man off a double in the gap? I don't know.
Yeah, it's below average. I'm.
Oh, it's well. It's. Yeah, it's
yeah, I'm not gonna. Not gonna crush him. But
scouts have given him a 30 grade arm, and that is the kind scouting report. What you do there to try and mitigate that? If he's
well, you,
a D,
you,
if
you get him in a throwing program.
Well, it's a throwing program, but I
you
think,
work on his mechanics.
And you can fix footwork, you can fix mechanics, you can fix throwing program, but there's also. Look, at a certain point, guys throw how they throw, and you can mess with arm actions like you have pitchers a little bit, but there doesn't seem to be a lot of faith in his ability to...
I mean, that's player development. Develop the player.
And that's... But again, we know this is not a... This is a guy who's been player development for a while now. And I think there's a certain point we can talk about player development, but there's also a certain limit guys can hit. There's certain skills guys their natural abilities allow them to tap into, and others there's not. So I just
– I mean, I've seen the same throws you have where I'll tell this story. It was right near the trade deadline, and I was watching the game that I saw Forrest Whitley in. I think it was the same game. And he made a throw that I don't think got to the first base dirt. And so the manager pulled him. And I didn't – you know, normally you tweet, oh, prospect gets pulled during game near trade deadline, hashtag hugwatch. I didn't even want to tweet that because I know that it wasn't for a trade. It was just you got to make a better throw than that.
So – and look, there's guys in all positions. Hey, there's times the ball slips out of their hand. You know, everyone has bad throws. It's, yes, it happens.
We've seen him on all the blooper reels with Mel Allen.
But it's a problem when it consistently happens. So, he's tough for me. Look, you see impact with the bat. There is a little bit of, you know, aggressiveness there. Last year's 96 strikeouts, 17 walks, which, you know, is obviously not the ratio you want to see. But, look, I do think Ryan Mountcastle is a good prospect. We have him top 100 that dropped yesterday. I think that Orioles fans should be excited about what he can bring with the bat. He's still young. You know, he was 20 years old, got to Double-A last year. He turns 21 in mid-February, right about the time they report to camp. So there's youth, there's time. I just – there's enough concerns for me about the quality of his arm that I don't know where it fits. Again, even left field, I'm thinking ball in the corner, he has to go hit the cutoff man. I mean, the shortstop's going to get way up the left field line. It creates a problem. So we'll see how much stronger it can get and just how much they rework it because it needs a total overhaul, and I don't know if you can get it to where it needs to be. So I don't know. Again, I struggle with it. The scouts I've talked to struggle with it because you like him. You like what he has to offer. You say maybe we can work with it. But in the grand scheme of optimism, I have not sensed a lot.
Yeah, and you mentioned he's 20 years old, so or soon to be 21. He's not in his man's body yet. He's not fully developed as a human being yet. So we'll see. I mean, it's well below average, but I'm not going to give up the faith that he can
look, and I want to just be frank here. This sounds like I've crushed Ryan Mountcastle. If I'm a player development, you know, what I want Ryan Mountcastle in my system, absolutely. Absolutely. You see the bat, you see the ability to, you know, some reflexes, some athleticism in the dirt. These are all good things. You absolutely say, yeah, I want that guy. Just in terms of long-term projection, how it ends up, you know, it's a little bit of a mystery to me. You know, another guy that was previously number one in this system, dropped this year to number three, who has had a different type of questions about his arm is Chance Sisko. You know, my old job actually covered Chance in high school, and it was funny because at that time, he could always hit, and he had a fantastic arm, but his receiving, blocking, all that needed work because he didn't start catching until his senior year of high school. It was going to take time. Then throughout the minors, you know, I remember doing a feature on him early. It was like, hey, we like his throwing, just needs to really, in the blocking, receiving, all that's coming along. It'll just be a process. Last year we saw him in AAA, and the blocking, receiving, defense got better. We saw improvement, but the throwing has gone way backwards. How do you kind of assess Chance Sisko at this point?
Yeah, I'm not as high on Chance Sisko as a lot of others. I've gotten some pretty negative reviews on him as a defender even this year. I'm with you on the throwing arm too. It's not even necessarily a case of the arm strength. It's the footwork.
It's the transition.
It's all that stuff that can be fixed. But as one scout pointed out to me in not really talking about Chance at all, just there's not a lot of real great defensive catchers in the major leagues. You don't have to be Yadi Molina or, you know, Wilson Contreras or whoever to be in the major leagues.
Lord knows there's some pretty poor catchers out there.
You could be Gary Sanchez, and you've got to hit like Gary Sanchez to be in the major leagues. I'm very interested to see what kind of impact Sisko's bat has in the major leagues. I mean, I can buy him hitting for a decent average, and we'll see what the baseballs do to him. and playing at Camden Yards will do to him. But I've never seen the big-time power from him.
Well, and I think with him, he'll show you flashes of it. We saw the opposite field home run the Futures game. Yeah, I remember seeing him go opposite field sometimes in high school as well with Santiago High School down in Corona. You know, I think with him, you talk about it's more of a smooth left-handed swing. And so for me, it's something where, you know, and you hear every evaluator from here to Timbuktu says, there's no catching, there's no catching, there's no catching. They're talking about both defensively and offensively.
I mean, the Orioles here, I'm just looking at their 30. they've got two in the top 30. That's a wealth.
Right. Austin Wins is known as a very good defensive catcher. So I think Chance Sisko, look, if you're a left-handed hitter who can, you know, consistently make solid contact, get that 270 with a bunch of doubles, they'll find a spot for you. The defense, again, needs to keep improving. But I don't know. I take some faith in, look, does any evaluator out there project Chance Sisko to grow into a Gold Glove defender? No. But if he keeps getting better and improving, as he did last year, he's still 22. He got his first taste of the majors last year, popped a couple home runs in limited action. I do think there is absolutely a route there for, you know, 5 years from now, if we look up and Chance Sisko is starting 110 games for the Orioles behind the plate, I will not be shocked. It will take work to get there, but I still see him as a very, very viable potential everyday catcher.
I mean, it's possible. It's going to take a little bit of time. The one thing I do know that when he catchers usually don't have the block or receive in the major leagues, one thing they usually do have is the bazooka arm, or I'm sure JJ will correct me on what type of artillery that should be, but he doesn't have that either.
Again, a lot of it's footwork. I think once he gets the footwork, you know, and John Mioli, again, our intrepid contributor from the Baltimore Sun, pointed out the second half of last year, Sisko threw out 41% of base stealers. That raised his entire season average to 22.6. But again, you start saying, okay, again, it's the baby progressions that you just need to see and want to see.
And catching, an aside here, judging catchers' caught stealing percentage in the minors as a factor of their arm, because the pitchers don't know how to hold runners just yet. Sometimes those runners are stolen, or those bases are stolen on the pitcher, and you can't tell by just looking at the, you know, going to BREF and looking at the caught stealing lines.
I do think overall,
I'm not trying to deflate your point. I'm just trying to, as an aside here, for all catchers.
I will say, AAA, they're certainly better than they are in the low minors.
Well,
that's
yes,
for sure.
Yes, I hope.
So, you know, those are the three top 100 guys, and all three of them, I think, are firm top 100 guys. They're in our top 75. You know, we get to that next group. You know, Hunter Harvey, we've talked a little bit about it. Just staying healthy. I mean, all the things you want to see in terms of, you know, frame, stuff. I mean, just to give you a taste, when he did get on a mound last year, 0.96 ERA, 30 strikeouts, 6 walks in 19 innings, up to 97, downhill angle. You see a really strong curveball, a changeup, you know, with some potential. It's all there. You just health.
I remember I saw him in 2014 in person, and I feel like I've seen a unicorn at this point. But he was nasty that day. He struck out, I want to say, 8 Lakewood Blue Claws. And, you know, throw that fastball, I want to say it was 96, 97 that day, with, you know, the knee buckler curveball and the changeup that had, it was okay, it wasn't great, but you could see the makings. And if he had stayed healthy the next, it's almost 4 years now, you know, you could see him being in the major leagues in some role. But he's still, it sounds like that stuff is still all there. And some of these injuries have been freak injuries, too. So I don't even know what to do with him at this point, but think he's got to follow that Dylan Bundy path. And if he's good, you know, he'll be a rotation piece.
You know, we have DL Hall, who was our first-round pick this year, signed for $3 million. You know, struggled in his debut, 10 walks and 10 to third innings. But first run after signing, I think we'll get a better view of him at Delmarva. But there's definitely, you know, left-handed pitcher who is able to get into the mid-90s. There's definitely a big ceiling there. I think a lot of people pre-draft liked him, you know, at the level of one of the top pitchers in the draft. Obviously not Hunter Green, Mackenzie Gore, but still, you know, a premium talent. You know, I want to get your feeling on Tanner Scott and just what you think he can be moving into the major leagues.
Okay, so one of my scouts is maybe a bigger fan of Tanner Scott than his agent or parents. And as soon as his outing in the Futures game ended, he texted me, Do you see? Yes, I see. I mean, we all know the stuff is real. It's fastball. It's from the left side up to 100 and something miles an hour. I've seen it up to 100 miles an hour in the fall league. The breaking ball is nasty too. And they keep, you know, working him in a relief ace type of role, by which we mean he's working multiple innings, sometimes usually as a starter. So he'll be a starter and he'll go 3 innings, which doesn't mean they want him to be in a starter's role long term necessarily, but they want him to be, you know, an Andrew Miller type who you can bring in like the sixth or something in or the seventh and bring him in for the seventh, eighth, ninth, like the old school closer who would, you know, do multiple innings. And that's how you develop that. You get him in at starting things, so you develop stamina and multiple situations, runners on, clean bases, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I kind of see him. We saw how the Astros used maybe Chris Devensky last year, a couple of those three-inning, four-inning stints. That's how I see Tanner Scott, you know, potentially working out with the Orioles. It was interesting. We saw him in the Futures game. He was absolutely nasty. We saw him in the Fall League. And when I went out the week I saw him in the Fall League, it was the very end, and he... You know, the first, you know, first outing was 96, second outing was 94, third outing down to 92. So some fatigue had set in. He struggled there at the end of the Fall League, but it's big league arm. The slider's gotten better. You know, we'll see. So, you know, we've talked about Tanner Scott, and I think that he's the guy of all these arms. We'll see with Baltimore sooner rather than later this year. Once we get down to that next group, you know, Cody Sedlak was a guy who's the Big Ten Pitcher of the Year, first rounder. Came in this year, it just was not good. 5.9 ERA, 69 strikeouts in 90 innings, didn't miss bats.
Had health injuries.
Health issues. What was your overall sense on Cody Sedlak and just where he stands as a prospect, talking to everyone you did this year?
I mean, he wasn't really in the conversation for Carolina League top 10 or top 20. It's basically what you said. It's a mulligan year. It's a gap year. This isn't the guy that we drafted, you know? Hopefully he's fully healthy this year because he did deal with, I want to say, some elbow dings. And if he comes back strong this year, maybe you see the real guy, because otherwise I don't know what to do with him.
Yeah, no, it's – it'd be interesting to see. Do you send him back to the Carolina League for the Orioles?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I mean, depending on what the depth chart looks like. If you have five guys that need to move up to the Carolina League, you make – keep him in, you may move him to Bowie, but on merit, I would send him back to Carolina.
You know, speaking of pitchers who, you know, have some prospect status, the numbers weren't great. Chris Lee, you know, we saw him, he came out to Durham. He had a day where you're saying, wow, that is a big league arm, and he's throwing enough strikes to make it work. But over the course of the season, obviously, it didn't happen despite, you know, big velocity. Definitely some movement on his secondary pitches that AAA hitters at least were struggling with. 83 strikeouts in 116 innings, 5.11 ERA, you know, 54 walks. What's your overall thoughts on Chris Lee as a pitcher?
I mean, it's the same as Hunter Harvey. He needs to stay healthy. He's had so many shoulder dings. I feel like I've been reading about him as the sleeper or the one to watch in our org reports for 5 years now. And the same scout who's on me about Tanner Scott is on me about Chris Lee sometimes. The stuff is undeniable when he's healthy. You know, 97 whatever from the left side with some nasty off-speed stuff. He just needs to stay healthy and you know, get some more innings under his belt. It's not...
He did go 116 innings this year. To me, you know, it's the guy where you say, okay, this electric stuff, let's see if it'll work for an inning or two. I think there's definitely a big league arm there. Whether, you know, do you trust him to throw enough strikes, you know... 18 batters a game, 20 batters a game, or excuse me, to get 18 to 20 outs a game, I should say, every 5 days over the course of an entire season?
Probably not at this point.
So, but I do think there's a big league arm there, and I think the Orioles will see both, you know, him and Tanner Scott coming out to help out of the bullpen this year. And look, you know, Zach Britton comes back to full health. They have those two power arms on the left side. Can make life pretty miserable on left-handed hitters in the American League East.
The one, we can keep talking about pitchers, but the one I wanted to talk to was Nestor Cortes, whether the Rule 5
pick. this is a guy that you feel is a potential sleeper, and obviously a guy. They've made a couple Rule 5 picks, Anthony Santander last year, Nestor Cortes this year.
Right.
What's been your overall, what have you heard on Nestor Cortes?
So, if you know from other podcasts, I do the Yankees system as well, and he wouldn't make the Yankees 30 because the Yankees 30 is crazy, but Nestor Cortes... He might literally be Vidal Nuno. I think that's, if you remember Vidal Nuno, I think he's still in the major league somewhere. He was a left-hander who did not have the best stuff in the world.
And by the way, Vidal Nuno is in the majors, but it was with the Orioles last year, and it was 12 games and a 10.43 ERA, so you might not be exciting Orioles fans that much.
Well, here's what he is. Here's what the guy is. He's got like a four-pitch mix, I believe. He's got the ability to throw strikes and get outs, and he's got a pair of brass ones. It's not the best stuff in the world, but he will attack the strike zone. And in minor leagues, he has just gotten outs. You knew going into the Rule 5 draft that he was going to be taken. I didn't know by whom, but you knew it was going to happen. And, you know, this could be a guy who's maybe a fifth starter if you squint, but he's going to be a guy who I expect to make the team, and I expect him to get outs at the big league level. He's not sexy or anything, but he's just gotten outs. And I've seen him. I saw him this year in Trenton. I believe he ticked 95, so it's not like it's an 89, 91 mile an hour fastball that I did see him with when he was with Pulaski a couple years ago. But I'm very interested to see what happens with Nestor.
You know, the Orioles, we talk about all these arms and they need it. There are some promising bullpen guys. We talked about the guys I mentioned earlier. You know, Gabriel Ulloa came up last year and did some okay things for them in a limited time. And, you know, even made a couple starts for them. You know, Miguel Castro is another 22-year-old. Didn't miss a ton of bats, but ultimately kept runs off the board and allowed less than a hit an inning. And that's what it's all about. So I do think there are bullpen arms there where you can help say, okay, let's shorten the game a little bit, especially if Tanner Scott can grow into that 2-3-4 inning type of relief role. It's interesting. I think there is a chance here the Orioles can get some help on that end of things this year. You know, looking through this system, is there anyone that you feel like is a sleeper, a guy that you think, you know, could eventually be someone that is much higher on these lists and ultimately making an impact in the major leagues?
There's two names. It's a personal kind of, I don't want to say the cheese ball at this point, but I saw him one day and I really loved him. I haven't seen him since because he's been injured, but Jomar Reyes. I love that dude. I get he's a big boy. I get he's probably going to have to move to first base, but man, I saw him attack, and in retrospect, this isn't a great name to talk about, Tyler Kolek. But he was throwing, you know, 97, 98 that day, and he was turning on it and ripping it down the line like it was 87. I think there's bat speed, there's whip, there's power, it's a very intriguing bat.
You know, Reyes really struggled a year ago at Frederick, came back this year, hit much better. It's only 50 games.
He had a broken wrist or something.
You know, but 302, 333, 434, you know, still 20 years old. It's not like this is a guy who's 23, still an A-ball.
No, he's not going to be on AARP anytime soon.
You know, he's turning 21 February, so yeah, he's an interesting guy. You know, another guy you talked about doing the league top 20s, you know, DJ Stewart was a first-round pick, went out to AA, hit very well this year. What was the overall sense on him?
You know, he's gotten a lot better. One of the things with him, if I remember correctly, because the stance at Florida State was interesting. It was, you know, a deep squat with a really like board stiff front leg, and I don't know how he was planning to hit like that. He did it at Florida State, but I know there were conversations within the organization about, you know, changing that stance. He would go back to one, he'd pick the other, and eventually they got him to a regular stance, and he performed this year. I think he was one of like two or three players in the minor leagues to have double digits in home runs, stolen bases, RBIs, and outfield assists. He's part of a very elite group of guys who had a very weird stat line. But he's, you know, he performed really well. I believe he made my Eastern League top 20. Know your beat. But he's another guy who could wind up in the major leagues.
You saw Park 26 doubles, 21 home runs. You saw 20 stolen bases. There it is. Walk to strikeout was good. 87 strikeouts, 65 walks. You know, again, it's a guy with pedigree. It's a first rounder, major college program. I think sometimes guys like that have a so-so first year. They don't show a lot of tools and kind of fall off the wayside. But before you know it, they're in the upper minors and playing pretty well.
I remember once. Another fun behind the BA stories. I was going to go see a different guy in Winston-Salem, but John Manuel, who's now with the Twins, told me, why don't you go see Luke Weaver in Florida State against Wake Forest, you know, right at the same ballpark. So I went and saw them, and what I really wanted to see that day was Jameis Winston closer. And we were right there. It was like a one-run game in the eighth. The DJ Stewart had to go and open it up with some triple or double down the line to bring in a bunch of runs, and Jameis sat down. And now the next time I'll see Jameis is, you know, playing for Tampa Bay Bucks. If I go to spring training in the Tampa side this year, I'll get to look at his home from the Yankees backfields at Steinberg, because you can see Raymond James right over their fences.
Yeah, hey, close calls. You can, yeah. Tell DJ Stewart. You know, one guy that is interesting to me, is Cameron Bishop. You can get your Baseball America Prospect Handbook. He was a a 26th round pick this year for the Orioles, but he was considered a third round talent. I mean, this was a guy who went into the year considered one of the best left-handed starting pitching prospects on the West Coast. Got hurt, preseason bullpen, oblique injury. He just sat, held out, didn't pitch at all. Then the Orioles drafted him. Kind of, you know, we talk about there's no such thing as draft and follow anymore, but there was a little bit of he was able to go out into the Cape, and that was something where draft him, see how he performs at the Cape Cod League, what he looks like, performed well. Then everything happened with the signing of one of their other picks, freed up some money. They gave Cameron Bishop, I think third or fourth round money. And so in reality, he's a 26th rounder who's really a third rounder, went out, debut, you know, it was only, 37 two-thirds innings, 0.72 ERA. I mean, this is a guy who, you talk about size, you talk about stuff, pedigree, was drafted out of high school, was at a major college program at UC Irvine. You know, this is a guy that I think the context is what enhances the profile. When you see, 26th round pick, you're not going to think much, but when you take into account, well, he's actually a top 100 talent who just got hurt, had to show he could still pitch in the Cape, did that, signed, and then dominated early in his pro career. I think there's a lot to like there.
Yeah, I mean, he's another guy that you're going to add to your stable of interesting arms in your lower
interesting
minor.
Left-handers. The more we talk about this, the more you realize a lot of interesting left-handers. Not to mention,
yeah, you got one, two, three,
Alex Wells, strike thrower extraordinaire.
Yeah, he's Iron Mike. I mean, it's pretty much what he is, and I'll be interesting to see what he does this year at probably Double A, right? No, High A.
He'll come up to, well, at least he'll start the year in Frederick. If he pitches similarly, I think we'll see him in Double A sooner rather than later. 113 strikeouts, 10 walks in 140 innings.
But that's still not my man Ranger Suarez from a couple of years ago in the DSL. I think it was 87 strikeouts and one walk.
That is impressive. That is incredibly impressive. But, overall, look, you like the Orioles group of position players. I think you definitely see some left-handers in particular that you can, project, helping the big league club out in some form or fashion. This is not a bad system, which is just to, bring it back to the beginning. We've seen the Orioles now. Obviously, they have no interest in the international market, which, does hurt their overall depth and ultimately is shutting off any pipeline of talent and just saying no to any of it is going to leave you a little short. But at the end of the day, just looking at the system right now, again, we heard it throughout the year that, hey, the Orioles system is not as bad as people say it is. And I think you can look at it and say, yeah, there's definitely talent here. This is not a bottom four, bottom five system.
There's some guys we didn't mention that are interesting to me, at least. I saw Ofelky Peralta. I mean, he had a terrible year, as far as I remember, numbers-wise, but the stuff was really good. Adamar Rafaela, I'm sure I ruined that, but he was at the top of a lot of Carolina League leaderboards this year and, was in the discussion for, the very back of the top 20 in the Carolina League. I think he won that league's MVP. He's a little fire hydrant-looking dude, but he can hit.
Keegan Akins, a lefty with some stuff. Austin Wins is a heck of a defensive catcher. There's guys
I think we've touched on pretty much everyone in the 30. Jeffrey Ramirez, another. He was a trade piece when the Yankees were stockpiling money for
Right, the Orioles giving us trading international bonus pool space was a very popular move for them this year.
Yeah, and he had some really nice year in the Eastern League this year, and he jumps out on a lot of TrackMan sort of things as a guy with a big time spin rate, which is why he gets swings and misses on his fastball. I know the Yankees, the reason they selected him in the minor league Rule 5 a couple of years ago was because one of their analytics guys, who's now with the Marlins, he played TrackMan bingo with him, and everything came up green light. And they took him, and he was really, really decent. I won't say really, really good, but very good at Trenton this year and Bowie as well.
Absolutely. Well, we'll see how these Orioles youngsters continue to grow and if they can get the big league club back to the playoffs. For Josh Norris, I'm Kyle Glazer. Thanks for tuning in. And make sure to pick up the Baseball America Prospect Handbook, baseballamerica.com/store, on sale now. Get all 30 Orioles prospect write-ups from John Mioli. And
plus
if you order
more
from us, you get a supplement with an extra prospect, organization talent rankings, position rankings. It's all in there.
It's
make sure to get your copy.
It's January 22nd today. 23rd today. It'll probably be here soon.
Absolutely. For Josh Norris, I'm Kyle Glazer. Thanks for tuning in, everybody.